I get City Hall, another at the State Parks building in the last week, where I guess somebody has been telling these different folks to go get hosed by hosing down their quarters and destroying property and so forth. And this has got a big stir in the papers and made the headlines, I think, on Friday. And the Mercury News reporter said they wondered if homeless activists were involved. I guess City Manager Dick Wilson was quoted as wondering whether the homeless activists, myself, Becky, and Bernard Klitzner, were involved in this. No, we're not, for all you folks who are interested. But, you know, this attempt, again, to smear those of us who are raising legitimate issues is just amazing. And as I said, Cole apparently went to Costner with the same question, and Costner told him that he'd been picked up for this bogus arrest warrant. He had to pay another $60 to get out, and I guess another $500 collateral on top of the $35,000 collateral he's had to post for his trial over in San Jose for, you know, busting up the Columbus statue. This is the story. Activist arrested for making false bomb report. So it looks like he didn't even get the headline right, but again, I guess Cole maybe can't be blamed for the headline, because that's some other bigoted idiot at the Sentinel, or the Urinal, as I like to call it. Seems a much more appropriate title with their yellow journalism. Local activist facing charges in Santa Clara County for smashing a life-size statue of Christopher Columbus was arrested in Santa Cruz Thursday for making a false bomb report. Now, that's not according to the most recent information which Costner told me yesterday morning, which is that they initially said that, but they changed that to say no, it was resisting arrest in a case that had already been resolved. According to county jail booking records, Costner was arrested on the 1100 block of Pacific Avenue by Santa Cruz police and held in jail on $500 bail. Thursday, Costner said he posted bond after being locked up for 7 hours. He said he's not clear why he was arrested. He said officers told him he had made a bomb threat and that there was an outstanding warrant for resisting arrest. He also said police told him he had made a false police report. Costner has told me he's made no police reports in the last 10 years. Costner said he was handing out flyers when he was contacted by police. Maybe he was in the mayor's office. Could that be? Since it's now illegal to have the First Amendment in the, according to the new decorum rules of Fitzmaurice, in the public reception area of the city council offices. Police did not return calls on Friday. His arraignment has been scheduled for June 28th. Costner is scheduled for a July 13th preliminary hearing in Santa Clara County Superior Court for charges of vandalism and possession of burglary tools in commission of a hate crime. The charges stem from his March 8th sledgehammer attack on a statue of Columbus inside San Jose City Hall. The burglary tool, of course, was the sledgehammer that he used to smash the statue with. And, again, it sounds like one of these charges they add on so they can roll a lot of stuff on top of you so you'll plead to one of the charges. A burglary tool, actually it was more a demolition tool, but I guess they'll take what charges they can. There's probably nothing for a demolishing. Vandalizing, yes. Burglary, yes. So Costner did this statue smashing during open public hours, so he wasn't burglarizing in any way. He didn't steal anything. He didn't take anything with him. He didn't break in. So it's, again, another attempt to smear someone, which Daryl Cole, the police officer's friend, dutifully passes along. Costner, reportedly part American Indian, said he attacked the statue for political reasons, namely that it is a sick reminder of the slaughter and conquest of indigenous people by early explorers. Prosecutors attacked the hate crime charge because the vandalism was against a person or property associated with a certain group, that is, Italian Americans. Costner said the hate crime charge is ridiculous. He described himself as a man who has spent the last 10 years of his life in human rights work. Costner is known for his poetic political ramblings at Santa Cruz City Council meetings and frequent acts of civil disobedience, including support of death row inmate Mumia Abu-Jamal and opposition to the city's sleeping ban. Certainly not frequent acts. Costner's done an occasional act of civil disobedience when he stood up in court and protested somebody's sentence and said that he had contempt for the court, and they gave him a contempt of court charge, appropriately enough. But that was way back in the mid-90s, and I don't recall recent civil disobedience, except I think there was, I think he may have been with us in the Representative Farr's office. I'm not quite sure if he was. I think he may have been. And he was arrested for resisting arrest at the Yugoslavia bombing protests when we were attempting to get the high mucky-mucks for the Democratic Party to stop the use of uranium-depleted weapons, the bombing of the civilian population in Yugoslavia back in May of 1999. And apparently, we and, I guess, others had some success in that, though I think it was mainly because Milosevic surrendered in that situation. And he was no angel either, but that's another story. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And this all kind of was a coda to the little snippet I played from Steve Argue. And Steve, if you're out there and you're listening to the radio show, feel free to call in and tell us just what the hell has been going on and who's been beating you up and so forth. You're on Free Radio.
Oh, Robert.
Yes.
You can hear me?
I can.
Hey, what happened to Steve Argue?
Well, we don't know, other than what we played on the air.
You don't know where he is?
No, he hasn't called in yet.
Hey, well, I want to say on the radio, man, these fucking troll busters, man, are starting to piss me off. And people better start leaving people alone. There's going to be some big-time trouble around here. You can come and you tell them fuckers they can come and see me. I have a 27-foot Dolphin, and I park on West Cliff Drive, and I want to see every fucking Nazi in this town. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that, of course, was the redoubtable Michael Tomasi, who's often at city council meetings, came to the city council coffee klatch injunction hearing, and I finally got his borrowed tape recorder back to him yesterday or the day before. Thank you, Michael, again, for your help in that regard. So, we are Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I also want to announce there is a new issue of Street Spirit available. Street Spirit was not being published last month because the editor, Terry Messman, who puts out this really fine monthly newspaper, it comes out of the American Friends Service Committee headquarters in San Francisco, but it is his work, Terry Messman. Terry was once an activist with the Oakland Union of the Homeless and actually got millions of dollars worth of housing secured for the homeless, not by begging the bureaucrats or panhandling the politicians, but by fucking taking over the property with homeless people, holding it and embarrassing the authorities into releasing it. So there perhaps is a light down a road that Santa Cruz activists might consider taking. Anyway, he now edits Street Spirit newspaper, and this June issue has the main story is land grabs, lies, and levelers about as the nationwide housing crisis intensifies, the brave fight against eviction led by the residents of some of the nation's most impoverished communities may be the spark of a new housing movement to come. And you can get copies of this paper by calling 423-HUFF. It's a buck if you're not homeless. It's free if you're homeless, and you can also sell it for free if you're homeless. I mean, you can sell it for a buck an issue and keep all the proceeds. You get the first 10 issues free. You got to pay a dime for the next 10 issues just to make sure that nobody runs off with all the papers and we kind of keep things straight. But this is a paper homeless people sell in order to get enough money to come in for a cup of coffee late at night so they can get away from those goddamn Ben Lomond troll busters, whoever else is out there running around, or the cops with their bogus warrants. That's what they're trying to do. This is a kind of a, it's by no means any kind of a living for homeless people, but it does provide spare change in a town that sometimes can be pretty tight with the spare change. So if you want the Street Spirit, give a call to 423-HUFF. Look for a vendor downtown. Help a homeless person by buying a Street Spirit, and help yourself. There's a lot of good information and good news. Actually, the news is not very good, but it's certainly worth knowing, and it keeps you abreast of events. Some of the stories, Willie Brown's Civic Playground, the removal of benches from UN Plaza in San Francisco, San Francisco shelter design keeps the homeless out of sight. Two articles by me, one on San Jose situation, homeless protests force San Jose mayor's hand, and Santa Barbara's sleeping ban stumbles in the courts. New legal strategy challenges police harassment of vehicle dwellers and homeless campers in Santa Barbara. All for a dollar, man. What could be a better deal? So check that out and go with it.
Lots of citations to be
Failure to Disperse, her album. You can pick it up at Denny Vista Recordings. See Denny at IGC.org. C-D-E-N-N-E-Y at IGC.org. Or give a call to 423-HUFF. We'll try to put you in touch and hook you up. Boy, that squeal is still ringing in my ears. I apologize again for that. Occasionally we have to eliminate the more faint-hearted. It's part of the triage. We try to eliminate those of you who have weak ears because we can only have the strongs. No, I'm just, of course, babbling here. My apologies again. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse, your twice-weekly talk show host on Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. I am the robe. I have the bathrobe. According to Andrea Perkins, I have the most extensive bathrobe collection in town, which, of course, is one of the more egregious exaggerations I've ever heard. I think I have 3 tattered bathrobes, and they're all in pretty sad shape. But, hey, right now I'm just looking for a room, so, hey, step up to the plate, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and let me know if you've heard of anything open for vacancy and lodging, and because I'm looking for that kind of thing. I got to be out of my place on June 30th. So, now on Thursday, I was playing some tapes from the Wednesday Farmers Market, and I'm going to be continuing that. Apparently, Sergeant Baker and various other police officers were harassing people in the market. First of all, harassing the drummers across the street from the market at the on the lawn of the church there, the Red Church, and they actually have installed some kind of armed or uniformed thug to direct the stop entrance into the parking lot over there. I don't know what's going on with that church. I mean, if there had been some serious damage done or been some real problem, I just don't understand why they're doing this. I guess I should be talking to them more. Perhaps I will. But over at the farmers market, we received, those of you may remember who listened to last Thursday's show, reports that people were being told they couldn't be there, told to move on, told they couldn't display their crystals, And, of course, the areas that people normally have the political tables at has all been mysteriously sort of sectioned and taped off so it can't be used with orange mesh tape. So it looked kind of unfriendly to me. I mean, I don't want to seem paranoid here, but that's how it seems. So I began interviewing people, and I also went off to interview some merchants to see if the merchants themselves, the farmers, if you will, that sell at the farmer's market, wanted this kind of police response.
We're talking to a flower vendor here at the farmer's market. Actually, and a peach eater, I might add, at this point. And, of course, the questions you probably know coming is, do the presence of counterculture people who aren't necessarily spending a lot of money here, but perhaps are spending some, contribute to or detract from the farmer's market?
I believe that people that have more money, that are spending more money, contribute to the farmer's market much more than someone who doesn't have as much money.
Do you have a difficulty with, say, the folks that are hanging out in the area over there?
Absolutely not.
Right.
They're going to do what they're going to do, necessarily what people do.
So you don't have any complaints about that?
Absolutely not.
Because the police have claimed that merchants have complaints about folks drumming across the street, being in the area with little tables to the side with their crystals and things of that sort. But you don't have a problem with that?
I don't think it affects business at all.
Right.
I think business is going to remain the same regardless of whether or not the drumming's playing or if people are shouting or whatever.
You want to put in a pitch for your flowers, or should we say should people come to this?
These flowers are grown in Watsonville,
right.
And they're harvested every other few months, and a lot of people dig them, and they're very popular, especially the sweet peas. They're not like any other flowers.
And they're usually at this spot here under the green umbrella. That's the place where you can be found.
Absolutely.
You want to give your name?
Sonny Harper.
Thank you, Sonny.
You're welcome.
I'm with Freeway. I'm interviewing merchants about the police crackdown on hippies. You're an egg person. Have you been causing any problems by counterculture people?
No.
Have you requested the police to tell them they can't play music, that they can't congregate, that they can't show their merchandise?
No.
Would you like people to do? Would you like the police to be doing this?
I don't really see the need for it.
I appreciate your straightforwardness. Anything you want to say to Free Radio folks?
No.
You are a cauliflower merchant. I'm with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay, great.
I'm kind of doing a quick survey. Police have been cracking down on counterculture people around the edges of the market.
Drumming only, yeah.
Now, what's your sense about this?
About the drumming? It's irritating. It's really annoying. I feel it drives away some of the customers. Personally, I like drumming at some instances, but not at this venue.
How about guitar playing?
That's cool.
And what about political tables off to the side?
No problem.
Because they have set up this tape that prevents political tables from being set up.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I don't want it to deter, the drumming, it deters some customers, I'm trying to say, and it vibrates off the buildings here, and we've had a lot of complaints from Logos and Total Fitness and that kind of store. So, in that sense, drumming, it's just a little more vibrating, and it's a little more irritating.
Drumming is your primary concern.
Yeah, the people, no problem, the crowd, blocking the entrance, of course, is a problem, but just drumming. Yeah, the guitaring's cool, the table's cool.
Want to put in a pitch for the cauliflower?
Cauliflower's great. Berries are even better. Swanton Berry Farm here.
Your name is?
I'm Heidi Herman.
Thanks, Heidi.
All right, see you.
Oh, Free Radio, talking to Blue Heron Farms here. Police have been, conducting sort of sweeps along the edge of the farmer's market. Any comments on that?
Well, I don't know. I've heard some strange stories about patchouli row.
There you go. I mean, you can never tell about those folks.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of law and order here.
And what does your coworker say? More police power here? What do you think?
I didn't hear the question.
There's been some concerns earlier about police driving people away from the edges of the market, telling them they can't play instruments or drum, telling them they can't show their crystals when they're off to the side there, and generally demanding ID and making them unwelcome and uncomfortable. What do you think about that as a way of purifying the market, adding the new white is right, mainstream America is right approach?
Right. I think they should be allowed to be there. Yeah, play some music.
Now, wait a minute. The Farmers Market Central Directory feels has asked the police to do this. Are you going against your Farmers Market Central Board here?
No comment.
Thank you very much. Anything, any comments about your vegetables here?
We have great vegetables. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And that was sort of the finale, perhaps not the most dramatic finale, of the Farmers Market discussion. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And, you know, here's sort of a hope that next Thursday we may actually have on the air directly from Berkeley an interview with Randy Silverman, the chair, ex-chair of the Berkeley Rent Control Board. That would be kind of interesting to hear. And we may be able to arrange that. It was suggested by a caller who called in, and that may be coming at us. There's an interesting editorial in the San Jose Mercury News, on which has got three different editorials today on rent control, or sort of in that general vein. One of them is an editorial by the Mercury News itself. It reads as follows: "City needs to step up action to help renters. Almost half of the residents of San Jose, nearly 400,000 people, are renters. Most took it on the chin during the economic boom. Double-digit increases were beyond what many tenants could bear. Some have been driven to doubling and tripling up, sleeping on floors, or fleeing the valley. In the 40% of apartments covered by San Jose's mild rent control ordinance, landlords have evicted tenants in order to illegally jack up the rents beyond the 8% ceiling allowed each year." I think that those buildings built before 1979 or something, or 1978, are under some kind of mild rent control in San Jose. Other landlords used evictions or threats of eviction to intimidate tenants into not complaining about unsafe conditions or to punish them if they did. Numbers are elusive. The city has never tracked rent increases or landlords' 30-day notices to vacate. That's the source of the problem. When no one's watching, bad landlords cross the line. Evidence and anecdotes are powering a tenants' movement that has brought together unions, church groups, and renters. A forum sponsored last week by People Acting in Community Together, PACT, drew nearly 1,000 people. At that meeting, Mayor Ron Gagne with a Spoon Gonzalez pledged to make the rights of tenants a priority. His promise, coming as some rents are beginning to moderate, is a recognition not only of the issue but also of the growing political clout behind it. Though belated, his response is not too late. Housing supplies for low-income families remain tight, and rents undoubtedly will rise again. Heading the coalition's demands is a just cause eviction ordinance, which other cities with rent control have. It would require landlords to cite the cause for an eviction, which the tenant could then contest in court. As it is, landlords don't have to give a reason, and tenants have little recourse. A just cause law would not affect units not covered by rent control, the majority in San Jose, since landlords can simply raise the rents to get rid of tenants. Advocates and opponents of the ordinance present arguments in columns below. We haven't decided whether we'd favor such an ordinance, but we sense that abuses of tenants are far more pervasive than the Landlords Association admits, and we are skeptical that existing laws, even if enforced fully, would provide enough protection. Nonetheless, there are actions the city could take to help renters. Many tenants don't know their rights, and some landlords profess not to know their responsibilities. There should be a massive education effort with laws in multiple languages posted in every building. The city's tiny rent control commission needs more staff, and legal services that defend tenants need more money. To Gonzalez's credit, he has appropriated substantial money for low-income housing. That was due to the work of the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, by the way, a San Jose Direct Action Group headed by Reverend Scott Wagers and his group of homeless activists shamed the city with sit-ins, with occupations, with marches, until Gonzalez released $13 million for low-income housing. Good work, Scott Wagers and the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry of San Jose. That was a little addenda to this story in today's Mercury News. City needs to step up action to help renters. If experience in the rundown Santee area is an indication, much of the lawyers' time will be spent hauling landlords into court. But their work will be limited to designated neighborhoods, and two positions are not enough. Renters in other parts of the city live in constant anxiety. They, too, deserve protection. Now there are two stories about this just eviction law, and I believe Donna Dice, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz activist, has proposed a similar ordinance. I'm not quite sure what the... I haven't compared the two, but let's read a little further. A just cause eviction law would protect bad neighbors, by Kathy Thibodeau. A radical initiative has been suggested for San Jose that would have a devastating impact on neighborhoods. This is the anti-ordinance column. It's called just cause eviction, but there's nothing just about it. It is unworkable and unnecessary. An ordinance would require rental housing owners to justify their actions in court every time they need to remove a tenant. The list of causes sounds sensible, including non-payment of rent, illegal activity, and disorderly conduct. Yet proving cause in court is hard to do. It's costly and time-consuming. For example, owners would have to depose and subpoena other residents to testify. There's no telling what juries will decide is just cause. For example, how long would neighbors have to put up with loud music at 2 a.m. before the owner could evict? What residents will voluntarily testify to get rid of drug dealers? Without proof of illicit dealing in the apartment, cause cannot be established. Renters would be rolling the dice any time they moved into a new apartment. They may have to endure the neighbor from hell because the owner can't get enough cause to evict. Groups advocating just cause evictions say some rental housing owners are issuing 30-day notices to vacate in order to skirt the rent control limits and raise rent for new tenants. This is already illegal under San Jose's rent control ordinance. After issuing a 30-day notice, owners are mandated to charge the same rent to the new renter. This, of course, is in San Jose. We'll interrupt this for a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, Steve Elliott.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Are we on the air?
Steve Elliott. Now, Steve, you are, of course, the infamous rock man downtown who has been taken to court for your rock sculptures.
Yes.
By Officer Perry, or some call him RoboCop. And you've also, I guess, been harassed for having a sign, a panhandling sign, which solicits funds but isn't illegal.
What they're actually going after is the word disabled.
Uh-huh. They claimed you were lying about your condition.
Yeah.
Well, plus the word disabled, I don't know if he's ever heard of the First Amendment. It's, you know, one person's disabled is another person's well-abled, but...
Yeah, where did the government get the right to sit there and capitalize on that word? I went down and looked in two different dictionaries, one over at the courthouse,
mm-hmm.
one over at the library, and I've got definitions out of there that say exactly what's my problem, and it has referencing words, and I went
back
those.
I understand Sergeant Baker gave you a ticket for using the word disabled in your sign, when in fact that is not a violation of the law. The law says if you verbally claimed you were disabled to somebody and soliciting money, that would be considered to be, ridiculously enough, of course, but still considered to be under the Kennedy Downtown Ordinance Law of 1994 a crime. But you didn't do that. You just had a sign that said disabled. And signs are exempted from that ordinance. So Baker, as usual, sloppy job, inappropriate
in the mail,
use of
the
law.
My sister brought me the mail, and they had changed it from just being a numbered violation to A. It came in the mail, and my sister brought it down to me. But in other words, instead of just giving a statute number or an ordinance number, they gave the same number, but they put A after it.
And what is
that? Which says that if you're passively holding a sign, or says that if you're false or misleading, and I'm not false and misleading anybody. I walk around day after day.
Well, no, we've already established that you can be false or misleading in a sign, and that's not illegal. And I'm not saying
but
you
the
are.
The fact is, I'm not.
Right. What the fact is that there is nothing in the code that makes it criminal, even if you were. And so that's what's so strange about this whole thing. It's not strange at all. Baker obviously just sort of decided to write the law as he went along, and he isn't
too
conversant
with it.
The
street. It was right at the beginning of that holiday we just went through, the Memorial Weekend. And the first one that came after was me. He already had the citation already written out, except for my name on the ticket. And then he took information and put it on the outside of his ticket flat book. And he wrote all kinds of stuff and tried to get me to tell me where my car was parked, what do I park at night, what's the color.
I remember. We talked about this.
Yeah, no. Who does he... He said, grilling me, and didn't even give me rights. And Sergeant Perry, he's, like, talking down to me and, like, made me frightened.
Officer Perry, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... I felt like I was going to be billy clubbed or thrown on the ground in a handcuff for just a couple little dinky rocks. I mean, I've looked at that spot over and over and over and over. There's no way. They blocked the way. They stood on one side and the other side of a little pathway I made around my rocks and called it obstruction.
These are little rock sculptures such as are done out on West...
it's done by the rock band.
Westcliff Drive.
I was a photographer, and he taught me how to do it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of fun, and it took the edge off my mother dying on me. I was living with her all my life, so when she died... kind of threw me back.
So what have you been at? What's up today that you're calling?
Oh, today I'm just feeling really bad. I've had this sciatica down my legs. I can hardly walk. You know, I get up in the morning and I want to cry, but what good is crying when there's nobody around?
I hear
so,
you.
And I got so many people around me now down in town. I mean, crying would just draw cops or something stupid. You know, so I can't cry. So I took 5 ibuprofen 600s this morning, and they don't seem to be working.
Well, you know, that was an issue which came up to some extent in a letter from Arnie Leff, who I otherwise have very severe disagreements with around his chair of the Police Review Board. But he's also a doctor who talked about the importance of pain control. And I think that we've had people on our show talking about, we've had a pharmacist and a doctor from way up north in California who faced actually murder charges because they prescribed medication for people that was, you know, really strong painkillers.
Well, at this moment, I wish I had some, because ibuprofen ain't cutting it, man. I mean,
understand.
I'm taking 2,400 milligrams is a lot. My liver has been hurting me. I'm in masses of pain, and I'm not getting any relief. You know, and I don't dare go to any of the doctors around here, because I can't even remember doctors that I had gone and seen, because I've been in such tragedy since 1980, when I was rear-ended. A guy doing 65 hit me at nighttime. My best friend is crippled right now. You know, and I can't call myself disabled. And then I go into another head-on accident, and I can't call myself disabled. I fall off a roof. I can't call myself disabled. I've had one tragedy. I broke my ribs. I can't call myself disabled. I got jumped down here in front of the Cooper House just about a week before they gave me the ticket, and I can't call myself disabled.
This is another troll busting.
Yeah, I had to go over to the Dominican, and they had the 10 X-rays, and it cost me $600. I didn't have got $600.
Right.
So, I mean, It's like purposely targeting. I went and saw a lawyer, and he told me, be careful, because once they get your ticket, they start writing your tickets everywhere, and they want to get you in their system, you know. I'm just an average guy that's just temporarily unemployed and temporarily having a lot of problems in my life. All of a sudden, I'm a target.
Take it to Fresno, Steve. We don't
I don't
want
to go to Fresno.
We don't want your kind around here.
Tough. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere.
All
they
right.
can push me around, but I like this town. I've always liked this town. It was a lot nicer at one time. I mean, it's still the same place, but people change, and things change, and the cops are changing, and
any other reports from the street that you want to pass on?
Yeah, there was a friend of mine that rings a bell down here, Mr. Perez. He was stalked by a guy with a knife, and I told him there was a couple of nice places down by the wharf to stand, so he went down to investigate, and he got stalked by a guy trying to steal his money with a knife. So then I talked to him later, when he was all frightened, he was, you know, it was like all discombobulated because he got away from him. He turned in a report, the cops just kind of ho-hummed it. Then later on, I told him, I says, next time you see the guy, laugh at him. And I says, then pull out your cane. He has like a little metal cane. And I says, laugh at him and pull out your cane. And he says, I'm worried about hurting him or getting in trouble. They'll blame it on me. I says, then you yell out really loud, I need witnesses. This man's trying to rob me with a knife. And he actually pulled a knife out on him. And so then he kind of shrunk. The bad guy shrunk and went to a doorway. But just the other day, he tried it again. He came by him for the third time. And he was sitting there. And so he stood. He always stands up when he knows the bad people are coming around him so he can be on the defensive. And supposedly the guy threatened him again. And as he walked, he got away from him, and he went over and called 911. The cops got him down the street, and they pulled out a knife out of his pocket and all kinds of dope.
All right, the police actually got there.
Yeah, so, I mean, who else has
amazing.
He been doing this to? Guy's a three-time loser already.
Well, you know, we're talking about police. I'm going to bring that up next. Let me do this off-air, unless there's more you want to say on the phone.
Well, when the police asked him the second time I was standing there, and the cops were wanting to know if Mr. Perez was taking medicines, they wouldn't believe him because he's homeless. They said, well, how do you know you had money? Because I've been holding a sign, help down the street. They said, I never saw you. Guy's been here forever. He comes in the morning and leaves in the early afternoon.
Now, where does he stand?
Right where I would have been, right in front of the Cooper House, there where the new arch is being built through.
Mm-hmm.
So, right there.
I see.
Yeah, I made a new sign. My other sign wasn't making it. It started getting all crumpled and crinkled, and it was too small. And as soon as I made a bigger sign, all of a sudden, it's like people start giving me. So I didn't make that much, but I haven't been making hardly anything at all. I'm failing as a bum.
You're a failure as a bum,
no,
Steve.
No, I mean, I've always liked achieving everything I've ever done, even being a bum. You know, I'm a temporary bum, but
well,
I
why should I talk to a failed bum, man?
Yeah,
I'll have to give
right.
you the bum's rush.
Wait a minute, I paid for this call.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah, but basically, the town is hard to live on. The street is hard to live on Pacific Avenue. You see a lot of tourists, and if that's all you see, that's all you see. But if you start seeing the people that actually live here and all that stuff, then that's all you see also. It's hard to get the two mixed. You know, and tourists are going around you, but you still see that street life, and it's pretty horrible.
Well, thank you, Steve. Anything more?
I could come up with a lot more. All I know is that I have a right to use the word disabled, and where did the government have the right to say they can only tell people they're disabled?
Here.
I'm an American, man. I don't know where they're getting this idea that we're supposed to be bowing and kissing their toes. You know? I mean, you're supposed to be serving and protecting me. And every time I try to use the government, I get nowhere. So I mean, why should they go ask for welfare? I don't want them controlling my life. That's why I'm holding a sign, because I'm temporarily unemployed until I get back on my feet and I heal a little bit better. I mean, it's hard trying to work, but you know, I don't want to go down and get on some program like welfare, and then it gets on a computer somewhere. Oh, life is rough.
I got you, man.
Well, folks, if there's anybody out there listening, if you know anybody that has an attorney that can help me out, you know, I went and saw one, but he kind of brushed me off. I need some help. I got two tickets, man. Obstruction of the sidewalk and holding a disabled sign, false and misleading, and I need some help. So if you're out there listening,
you got a phone number for people to call?
Help. Yeah. Meanwhile, I heard that you won a court case that you can go back to those meetings.
Yeah, we can go to the city council offices if we want until such time as they decide they want to try and get another injunction.
Yeah, they're rats.
We'll see what happens with that.
Well, wait a minute, they're muskrats.
Indeed.
Okay, here's the number. 457. That's 457-9754. And that's the Community Action Board, and they'll have a voicemail there for me. And the number is 1773.
So that's 1773 at 457-9754,
yeah,
for Steve Elliott.
And if you want to be there and see what kind of a fool I make of myself trying to be an American. Hey, you were telling me how you could get it recorded, and I also went down to the law library and asked if I could get the ordinance, you know, how many people have been arrested for the same thing and
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. But how do we get it recorded? I definitely think that's a good idea.
You know, I'm going to try to find that out tomorrow.
Can you do that with an infraction?
Yeah.
They always seem to stack it against you with an infraction. You have no legs to stand on.
Yeah, an infraction, you can't have a jury trial and you don't get a public defender, but you have the right to have it recorded, yes.
Yeah, because I want it to be added to my appeal, because I'm going to appeal it if I don't win it. I want them to know what's been said and now what's going to happen.
I'll try to get you the code section. You may have to harass me a few more times or call me a few more
times.
That's
fine. I have until the 29th. I have to act on both of them by the 29th. I've already put in a not guilty on the obstruction, and then I also have to put in by the 29th. That's the court date that I have, but I have to put in for that other one of not guilty.
And for the rest
of
you,
I'm not guilty of
get these bogus tickets, remember to disqualify Mulligan, put it on another court.
Yeah, it goes right to another commissioner.
And then call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll talk some about it. Not that we're any legal experts or anything.
What happens if I've already disqualified Mulligan and there's only one other commissioner, and that's the one I'm going to see in the first case, when I go to appeal it, does it go to a regular judge or does it go to Mulligan? How can the same judge hear?
Well, no. Appeals will go to a higher judge, or it'll go to a superior court judge.
So we could end up in Supreme Court over the issue of having the right to hold the sign. Then.
Well, if you're able to take your own appeal in pro per or get a lawyer to help you, it takes a lot of paperwork. I would imagine.
Where's the guy that's on the street going to get a lawyer?
I don't know, but I'm going to roll. I'll talk to you more later, Steve.
Okay, well, folks, goodbye and see you later.
Alrighty, man.
Bye bye.
And phone lines to Free Radio Santa Cruz are open and apparently being used. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad.
That's good. Just tuned in, actually. I was making it a point to tune in, actually, to see exactly where you stood on the whole stone throwing business.
But the
one question I have is...
We haven't talked about that one yet, but...
Just bring out the... I don't know how, I mean, innuendos have been made, man.
What are we talking about, caller? Clue us in.
Innuendos have been made as to, like, your relation or any involvement you may have or may not have had with the floodings of...
We talked a little bit about these vandalism at a couple of the public buildings. I am wearing my get hosed button about the city officials.
Here's my summary on it, certainly. One of my concerns.
But I have no particular involvement in any of that stuff, and I don't really believe it's particularly appropriate way to go about it. But since the city closes all legitimate avenues, I'm not surprised that people do that kind of stuff.
That seems almost vindictive, but I won't go into it too heavy. But one of the things I look at is just the recent one with the actual state parks building. If somehow somebody knew about that in advance, about the raisings of, or the putting in place of a unvoted for, I might add, proposition about staying 30 days at the campgrounds.
Let's explain that to folks. The new rule at state parks, which had been used as kind of an emergency camping area for people, is that if you stay for any accumulated period of 30 days staying in a park will not only bar you from that particular park, but from all parks in the county, in the Santa Cruz County, for the next year.
They did raise, however, the per-use, per-lot number.
Meaning?
So in other words, instead of, I think it was three before, three-tenths, I think you can have a higher number of actual tenths.
Just don't try to stay for more than 1 month per year total.
Right. And
well, that's kind of like don't sleep except during the day, and don't stay for 3 days in a Santa Cruz except in a driveway.
So here's
the rest of the month you can't do it.
So here was my summary on that, is that possibly with looking at if somebody knew that in advance and made use of that knowledge to retaliate, that kind of, to me, I call that too far, perhaps. I mean, somebody else may see it as gray, I see it as a darker shade, you know? And I don't know, I'm not too tough on that one, you know what I mean?
Should have been for the past previous time. I don't hear no sound. I want to hear each and everyone say something. I don't want you to at no time to ever think you've been getting down. See? This is no disco. This is reggae. And this is the only music that can make you happy. Physically, mentally, spiritually, vertically, musically. So wake up the head. Thank you very much.
It's the complete version of We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, much in demand here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is, of course, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Homeless, Civil Rights for You and Me. Just civil rights would be a nice idea. As Gandhi said when he was asked, what do you think of Western civilization? And he said, it would be a good idea. And so would civil rights in Santa Cruz. So stay with us and help that struggle forward for the next 2.5 hours here at 96.3. We have a call-in number at 427-3772, 427-3772, or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, for the numerically challenged. This is a free radio station, which means, one, there are no commercials on it, and two, we don't have any FCC licensing or censors. Three, we don't respond to pressures from big corporations. And four, you get to say whatever the fuck you want. And that includes all those nasty words that they told you you should not say aloud, like fuck, piss, shit, motherfucker, cocksucker, and tits, the famous George Carlin 7 naughty words. So come on, call in. You can get the thrill of saying these four-letter words on the air and release yourself. But hopefully you'll put them in some kind of context that will enable us to address community issues, because that's really what my show is about and what I think a number of shows on free radio are all about. Dealing with issues in the community that the politicians, the experts, the bureaucrats, the landlords, the merchants, the folks in power just simply don't care to address, or feel powerless to address, or whatever their explanation, they don't address. So we got to do it. And that's what we do here on this station. We share information. We share concerns. We hopefully eventually will share common efforts to make changes such as meaningful rent control, ending laws that criminalize the poor, putting in laws for bikers, bicyclists that actually pay some attention to the needs of bicyclists, getting some real affordable housing instead of subsidized monopoly service provider projects like the Dolphin Lee. Changing the face of society in Santa Cruz so it actually allows people to be human beings here, so it allows people of all classes to live here. I know it's a wild and crazy dream, but somebody has to dream it, and I think, as Lennon said, I am not alone in that dream. So dream with me, and let's fight the nightmare together. 427-3772 here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. I'm kind of running today as usual, and we had a tape snag, so I am recording, but I've only got 90 minutes of tape, so if anybody wants to put in a tape and do some recording in about an hour and a half, I'd be appreciative. Last show didn't get fully recorded because of our eccentric tape recorder. However, we do have a phone line that's working.
Yeah, I was just listening to your show, and I was really impressed to hear somebody talking about issues in Santa Cruz. And I had an issue that I thought should be mentioned.
Okay.
I don't know if it fits the context of your show, but I don't think many people are really aware of some of the situations going on downtown. In particular, there's a lot of sexual predators that hang out downtown with the express purpose of meeting young girls, runaways, young teens that are rebelling or want to go hang out with the cool street crowd. Mm-hmm. And I know several young teenage girls that have been plied with alcohol, drugs, flattery, and end up on the beach getting raped.
Huh.
And in one fellow in particular, had been with a succession of girls, and every girl that came to light, the same person was there. So it was obvious that this person was, you know, a predator, just someone who habitually, consistently spends time downtown meeting young teenage girls. So, you know, parents that send their kids to the mall or to the movies to hang out, I think don't realize the risk they put their children in.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this from personal experience because...
Are you a parent yourself? Or?
Yes, uh-huh. And, you know, it happened with my daughter and then a friend's daughter, and it came to light that it was the same crowd that was just there constantly plying the girls drugs, alcohol, sex. And these are guys in their 20s, and they're losers. You know, they can't get people their own age, so
they
hang out with
people. Yeah.
The younger crowd. They hang out outside the junior high schools. You know, when the high schools let out, they're there.
Well, of course, statutory rape is still illegal, and abusing people in this fashion is a crime.
Yeah, and it's irrelevant because, you know, we pressed charges against one of them, got 4 felony convictions. And then they let him out for 2 months prior to sentencing, and the DA told me, you'd be shocked how many criminals are walking the streets and what kind of criminals are walking the streets. Needless to say, given that he was looking at 20 years in a penitentiary for child molestation and statutory rape, he disappeared. Gosh. So the police did their job, the DA did their job, the witnesses did their job, everybody testified, the lawyers did their job, and he walked. Now, that's the one that got caught.
Well, say rather he ran, right?
He ran.
Right.
Well, kind of strolled, I would say. It wasn't exactly a dragnet. But, you know, that's the one that all the effort was put in. The people testified. They had the case. It was airtight. Generally, these young guys act with impunity because they know the girls aren't going to testify. The parents aren't going to put them through that. The police really don't have any kind of surveillance going. They know they won't get caught, and so they can habitually
Have you gotten together, caller, with other parents who have this concern?
I've talked to them, yes, and you know, there's a consensus that, you know, we've gone to the police. It was a wasted effort, and you know, the police have been made aware of the situation, but frequently they just. They need a really airtight case before they can even make an arrest, and they just can't get that.
You know, how about forming an organization to actually bring people together to have these concerns, and then taking a table down to the mall, writing up some literature with guidelines for both parents and young people who are concerned that they or their friends may get involved in the situation, with a phone number, kind of a hotline number for people to call for information. What do you think of that idea?
Well, it's not a bad idea. I don't know if it would reach the parents. I think what's happening is that a lot of parents use the mall with a bit of denial as a babysitter, in the sense that they just drop their kids off to the movies with $10 and let them shop, and thinking they're in a safe situation when, in fact, they're not. They're extremely at risk. And that's why I thought to call. I never call for radio shows.
Well, I appreciate your calling, man.
You have a format where you're addressing issues in Santa Cruz, and this is a big one that most people are not aware of in Santa Cruz.
Well, let me say this. If anybody, of course, other people may call in, but if some people are interested in this issue but are reluctant to publicly address it on the air, the call-in number off-air here, and it's a message phone, but you can leave a message, is 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a civil rights group for homeless people. But if you have something that you would like to say about the issues that this caller has raised, and let's say perhaps you want to get in touch with this caller independently, and I take a caller, you might be reluctant to give your number out on the air, that what I can do is you can call me off air later, and I can let you know if anybody has called in and put you in touch with those people.
Excellent.
Again, the number to call if you're interested in the issues of protecting young people downtown, educating them about the risks involved down on the mall, and let's say a hotline to go to if you encounter, you know, if you feel your friends are in trouble or you're in trouble, the number to call if you want to get in touch with this caller is concerned is 423-4833, and I'll pass that on to him, 423-4833. And you can also call, of course, the live on-air line, 427-3772, which will soon be open and ready for talking. Thanks a lot. Hey, thank you. Bye-bye. And we have an open line at 427-3772, as I mentioned before. It's good to get new callers, and it's good to hear new issues, even if they're not issues that I myself champion or I'm terribly aware of. We can all get me, you know, become more aware of what's going on downtown. I'm usually defending the young people who are down there, perhaps even defending the predators, not knowing that they are predators. I'm defending, I'm usually critical of how police handle the situation downtown, driving away hacky sackers. Frankly, I think a good game of hacky sack is a healthier, a more bonding thing, likely to help young people rather than hurt them. And of course, it becomes targeted by police, just as there was a lot of targeting of the farmers market on Wednesday. And we played some interviews on that subject on Thursday when I have the second version of this show, that which airs twice weekly from 6 to 8 is that version, 6 to 8 in the that edition, I should say, in the evening. I'm going to be playing some more of those interviews from the farmers market, both from people who have booths there and from folks who have felt harassed by police there for no apparent reason other than apparently a desire to clean up or class cleansing or lifestyle cleansing of the farmers market, which happens every Wednesday afternoon in downtown Santa Cruz, and it's kind of been going on since the earthquake. So, definitely. Give us a call at 427-3772. You got some stuff you want to talk about. Much in the news for us has been the City Council Coffee Clatch, which has kind of come to a strangely successful conclusion in a certain way, but very unsuccessful in the others, and we do have a sleeping hand ban. We'll talk about that, but first let's take this call. Caller, call in again. I'm sorry I wasn't quick enough to catch you. Generally, the good rule is to stay on the line about, 5 or 10 rings, because I don't have a phone ringing here. I have a kind of a light that blinks, and so I have to be quick to catch it. Sometimes I'm reading, sometimes I'm stretching, so sometimes I'm just not noticing it. So give a call to 427-3772. Come on and call back in, and we'll talk to you about that. As I said, this last week has been the kind of the culmination, a week and 2 days ago, Judge Sam Stevens essentially revoked the TRO or refused to turn it into a preliminary injunction that he had issued against myself, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner almost half a year ago, where we tried to peacefully lobby City Council members in their office in the public reception area open to the public all day. And we were accused instead of being responded to in a meaningful way, given an appointment, being treated with a little respect, instead we were given... we were accused of harassing a staff member there, when in fact we weren't doing that, and the evidence showed it, and Stevens threw that out. But unfortunately, Stevens also trying to split the baby, as they said, of Solomon splitting the baby. He offered to split the baby to see which was the true mother, since both mothers wanted the child, and when he saw that one of them that wasn't willing to do that, he gave the child to that mother. But splitting the baby, I guess, here was a real splitting of the baby. What Stevens did was he said, yeah, you guys aren't guilty of harassing. Anna Brooks, the secretary of Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, the administrative assistant, but you are going to have to hold yourselves to the new decorum rules. You cannot, this is not a public area, really, he's saying, that it's not subject to First Amendment protections in the way that other public spaces are, that, for example, you can't leaflet there, like you can't stay there for any period of time. A series of this sort of ex officio, off-the-cuff decisions by Stevens, which don't constitute law. They don't have the force of law. They're just his opinion. But they are a kind of a green light to repression by the city attorney and the mayor if we return to do the coffee klatch and city council tag team teach-in. And a reminder what that was the effort in December by about 20 of us, usually one or two, sometimes three at a time. We would go to the city council offices during business hours, usually only about during half of the day of the business hour. We would wait for a council member to appear. We would leave him or her a note. We would seek to talk to him on the issue of homeless survival around the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes homeless people and makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep outside and to even cover up with a blanket between the hours of 11 and 8:30 in the morning. Yes, you heard me right. That is a law in Santa Cruz. It was designed to harass hippies originally, before they had the word homeless was in widespread usage. That was 1978. It was passed in the wake of the Scott Creek Bluff victory by many kind of transient counterculture people who won a essentially jury nullification case where the jury decided, in spite of the evidence, where they all admitted they were guilty of trespass, we won't convict them. These people have been driven out of town by the police, and they parked on a piece of land where they were really given permission by the owner, but the authorities dicked the situation around, and then they towed everybody's vehicle. All of this around Christmas in 1977. And in 1978, after the courts were all hot to convict these people, but the jury threw out all these charges, and because they threw out the charges. The Santa Cruz City Council under Bert Muley and the old, I guess people who thought they were oh so liberal on Nicaragua passed the sleeping ban, which is the whole new camping ordinance, or Municipal Code 6.36, whose first section, 6.36010A, criminalizes sleeping. Sleeping, period. You can't sleep in a vehicle. You can't sleep in any structure but a house or hotel. You can't sleep outside at all anywhere in the city, with very minor exceptions that cover only about 5% of the people in the homeless population of 1,000 to 2,000 in Santa Cruz. It's legal, for example, to sleep in a driveway, in a vehicle, with the written permission of the owner and the tenant for only 3 calendar days per month. It's legal, for instance, to sleep in your vehicle on a church property parking lot, but only 3 vehicles per parking lot, with the written permission of the church, and it's hard to get that, and there aren't many churches that do that. It is legal to get the written permission of a business and park in a vehicle on their parking lot, only 2 vehicles to a business parking lot. And again, that's been done a little bit, and I want to commend those businesses like Kinko's that have allowed that, but that's only 2 vehicles per parking lot. And I also want to commend the police department, those officers who have looked the other way when, realizing that the law just does not cover the human reality of the situation in Santa Cruz. People must sleep at night. You can't work in the day if you can't sleep at night. And if you have mental health problems, if you have alcohol and drug problems, it's even worse, of course. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It is some sort of convenience system designed for the merchants to drive a certain class of people out of town and give the police a, quote, useful tool. So this is something I've been interested in for some time, and eliminating the coffee klatch was a sort of lobbying effort to stop that. It wasn't a protest, because we weren't engaged in singing or, you know, loud picketing or chanting. No, we were there quietly. We respected the office decorum, though there were no decorum rules, until Mayor Fitzmaurice started harassing, well, even after Mayor Fitzmaurice started coming out and demanding that we leave without any justification. He wouldn't talk about any of the problems he had. If he had some particular problems with us in the office, he just blanketly accused us of harassing his staff. and it was clearly a cover story. He wanted the he wanted to start setting a record that we were harassing his staff. But when it came down to examining the instances 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and they amounted to things like a claim that we pilfered pens, a claim that we were occupying the office furniture by sitting there in the public area, a claim that we spoke in loud voices when we taped the whole thing, we were prepared to show no, we were not speaking in loud voices. The judge didn't even want to hear the tapes. He just sort of essentially took us at our word, or believed that there was just not sufficient evidence to believe Anna Brooks, who is a fragile city employee who covers her fragility with a kind of a loud, officious manner herself. That's the kind of person she is. I don't want to, I'm not going to play games and pretend I love Anna Brooks. I don't. You know, on the other hand, I don't hate Anna Brooks. What I detest is how the city officials, like Mayor Fitzmaurice, have used Anna Brooks instead of dealing with her problem, you know, saying, gee, it looks like there's, you know, she's beginning to feel pressure from the situation, because she apparently did talk to Fitzmaurice about it, and she did talk to some people about it. They didn't come in with mediation efforts. They didn't come in with conflict reconciliation, conflict resolution efforts. They didn't come in with a set of rules that might be agreed to by all sides. They didn't even inform those of us who are in the offices, and we could have regularly been informed. They had our phone numbers. We were there. They could have talked to us. The assistant city manager, Martine Bernal, and I worked out a perfectly reasonable agreement on how to give flyers to city council members. We sat down, we talked about it for 20 minutes, we came up with an understanding. It was clearly Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, one, not wanting to get anything to do with the staff in any really helpful role, but to use them as, you know, the woman tied to the tracks who was being hit by the activist train, and he was going to be the hero and run in and save them. How would he save her? How would he save this woman? Would he save her by making some reasonable compromises, doing some actual negotiations and discussions and dealing with the real problems? No. The solution was to get a court-ordered injunction that would bar these people from the office, and essentially cut the First Amendment off at the neck, or at the legs, but cut it off. That is our mayor, Tim Fitzmaurice. That's the Green Party-endorsed mayor, Tim Fitzmaurice. That's the mayor that the Green Party declines to hold accountable for his, I'm a Green Party member and I support the Green Party platform, oh yes, 100%, but the Green Party platform says no sleeping bans. And the Green Party members apparently do not have sufficient conchos or ovaries to do shit about this. And they had a meeting yesterday, and if anybody is a Green Party member who wishes to give me some good news that something actually happened at that meeting, I know David Silva essentially has withdrawn in disgust from the Green Party. He's going to give him 6 weeks, and then he's going to resign, was the latest word I heard. He's been trying to get Ed Porter to go public with his so-called revision of the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. That's Councilmember Pinprick Porter, we call him that, because he is so sensitive that if you criticize him at all, he will not call you back. This is one of our sensitive council members. I should have known this when I saw him fly into a tizzy after Bernard Klitzner wrote a letter about how Catherine Byers killed the safe sleeping zones last year. She's a council member who has left the city council, but I'm afraid we haven't seen the last of her. She's a council member who sold out the homeless. And when Bernard Klitzner wrote a letter that said, "When the next homeless person dies, carry the body to the yard of Catherine Byers," Ed Porter used this as an excuse not to talk to Bernard because it was so uncivilized what he had said. Not the laws against the homeless that are uncivilized, not the absurd and gutless behavior of city council members that lacks any veneer of real civilization, but the critics, the people in the coffee clutch, we are the uncivilized ones. Okay, well, this doesn't really deserve a lot of comment. It's ridiculous. It's been revealed as ridiculous. Unfortunately, these grand panjan drums, as I call them, they sit up there and they continue their pontificating, and they continue ignoring issues, and they continue to slander and smear those who try to push the real issues. Whether it's Marty Wormhout trying to gut Michael Schmidt's supervisorial campaign because he insists on raising the issue of homelessness, and that's something Marty Wormhout does not want to talk about for very good reason. Marty Wormhout has been hostile and prejudiced against homeless people since her mayorship many years ago, and there is a clear record of that from the word go, and I would love to have her on my show to discuss that. Andy Schifrin actually asked me for a tape. He's her aide of the Mike Schmidt interview here, or I should say debate here, on rent control. And I actually didn't have that tape. Again, another one of those mechanical failures. But luckily, I want to thank Judith for stepping up to the plate and making that tape available. I'm going to be able to make it available to Andy Schifrin and Marty Wormhout and Michael Schmidt. And we may even do a repeat playing of that, since I think Michael Schmidt had some good things, interesting things to say. He says he's against rent control, but then he says he's in favor of a board that prevents rent increases beyond the inflationary cost of living index increase. That sounds like rent control to me there, Michael. I don't know what you know, maybe you don't like the word, but it sounds like the thing is something that Schmidt, who's the Chamber of Commerce CEO, who's been a man who's been fighting for homeless rights issues for a year and a half, when other people have remained silent and done active organizing around that issue, he's now running for supervisor, which I think is a bad idea, but hey, I mean, if he can do the impossible and maintain his principles in this situation, I'll just roll over and play dead. At least with him, I will. So we got a couple letters, which I want to read here. This is one which I grabbed from Rabbi Chaim Levin. Chaim has written this letter to the Sentinel, and this I'm going to scoop the Sentinel by reading it on the air. I hope I'm not jumping the gun, but he seemed to be willing to have it publicized. In fact, I think it may have even gone out on the email. It's in response to the Coffee Klatch decision, and it reads as follows. After witnessing the trial of the Coffee Klatch 3, it is clear this case belonged on Dr. Laura's radio show rather than in the Superior Court of the County of Santa Cruz. Truly, there was no reason to go to court if Anna Brooks had had a cup of coffee with Robert Norris and discussed her concerns about their lobbying effort. As Miss Brooks said in her testimony, she is, quote, excellent at my job, unquote, and, quote, by virtue of my position, I am the first person to welcome a visitor to the mayor's office. The fact she never spoke to her superiors about her alleged harassment showed she had a plan based on her customer service experience to handle the matter alone. So what did she do? What every American does. She went to court. The $12,000 that the city spent representing Ms. Brooks had no bearing on the fact that Ms. Brooks had to have her day in court. Was Ms. Brooks testifying in court on city time? What Ms. Brooks did was organize homeless activists across California to also lobby their city councils to end laws which criminalize homeless people. So what social activists couldn't do, Anna Brooks, City Attorney John Barrasoni, Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, and all of Anna Brooks's well-wishers and $12,000 of taxpayer money were able to accomplish. I want to thank them all for once again bringing the issue of homelessness to public attention, and thanks to Judge Stevens for dismissing the case. Chaim Levin. That's an amusing take on the case, and I wish I were as sanguine as Chaim is about this situation. I think, in a way, certainly, we had a lemon, which is to say a lack of protest and a lack of strong activity to end the sleeping ban, and so we made lemonade. We did a lobbying effort that was low-key, and when the city blundered and tried to criminalize us, did criminalize us for 5 months, we put that issue in front of the media and the public through the courts, and that was good. The problem is it cost a lot of money, it took a lot of time, and to some extent it distracted from the real issue, which is survival sleeping for homeless people and discriminatory double standards that criminalize the homeless for things that the rest of us take for granted. That is the real problem, and that is the issue that the city council has successfully ducked for the last 5.5 months and continues to duck. Don't let them duck it. Call up the city council right now. Get on the phone, 420-5017. 420-5017. Call them up, 24-hour number, and say, guys and gal, there's one woman on the city council, time to bite the bullet, put the sleeping ban on the agenda, and take some action to decriminalize sleeping. It's a human rights offense. It's institutionalized hate crime. It's not something we need in the 21st century in Santa Cruz. 420-5017. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Peer Robert Norris, the robe made famous recently by Andrea Perkins' surprisingly positive story in the Metro Santa Cruz about the City Council Coffee Klatch victory. I encourage everyone to take a look at it. It's got a fine picture of me. You can pin it up on your wall or wear it downtown as you wish. I'll try not to be too predatory toward any young women who come my way, or older women for that matter. I think it's really a good story. I encourage you to look at it, to read it over, maybe even to write a letter about this issue, but more important, to deal with the sleeping ban. 420-5017. 420-5017 is Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice's number. Actually, that's the entire city council, but it goes to him as well. Yeah, well, that sounds like dead air, but it's actually me struggling with another tape recorder that doesn't work in the studio. By the way, we are free radio station in one sense, and another, it does cost money to run this station. So if you decide you like what you're hearing and you want these programs to continue, and you want to, say, contribute to the upkeep of the equipment and such like, you can give a call to the off-air free radio voicemail number, which is 427-4523. 427-4523. And, you know, you can send your checks, property deeds, bank accounts, and so forth in at that point. Hi, you're on free radio.
Hey, Robert, good morning.
Hey, it sounds like Mr. LaMonica.
I thought maybe you'd have some comments on the riparian corridor protection actions. There was a couple of actions, and also there was a protest, I think it was Friday, at the town clock about Palestine and Israel.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you can brief the audience on what went down with those two things, because I am out of the loop.
Well, they just strike me as more of the same. I'm sorry, or I'm not sorry to say, but for all of the hoopla regarding a protest at the town clock about Israel and Palestine, it doesn't rock the boat too thoroughly here in Santa Cruz.
Not
at
all.
It's a blowhard issue.
Well, I know that you are kind of in your own methodical way, perhaps moving toward rocking the boat some more. You have met with Randy Silverman of the Rent Control Board on Friday.
As did you. That was pretty cool, wasn't it?
From Berkeley, yeah.
He wants to come back, and he will be coming back, and he brings with him some good clout, really. He is a two-term chair of the Berkeley Rent Stabilization Board. Who is active on state politics now, attempting to get no-fault eviction extended from 30 days to 90 days. Randy Silverman is in for the long haul, and I think the next time that we meet with Mike Schmidt, who has offered to bring together some local realtors to discuss rent stabilization, that we'll invite Randy Silverman.
I think that's great, and he seemed to be very... He seemed to be a very laid-back kind of guy, willing to talk to a lot of people, and I just, I was very impressed with him, and as I said, he did tell me as well as telling you that he was willing to come down again, speak at engagements, discuss the effects of rent control in Berkeley.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was great, and I thought that you and I were both very sincere about the political climate here in Santa Cruz, Mr. Silverman, I think, very much... could see where we were coming from with our perspective. The local progressive so-called political establishment is about cronyism, look the other wayism, and blowhardism.
Definitely. Did you hear anything about the Tideland scan press conference and
well,
the shindig?
That's what I'm saying. Okay, you know, it's all glorious and wonderful to protect riparian corridors, of course, but. What it does in essence is it also protects property values. It does not rock the boat. You want to rock the boat in this town in a substantial way, in a progressive way.
Well, you're talking about the Tidelands Seaside Company dispute,
right?
See, I'm pretty much squarely in favor of that issue because I think it involves getting property back from the Seaside Company that should belong to the city and the community. And
well,
Robert. That.
I'm not necessarily against it myself. It's just when those kinds of things take precedence. And take the the press conferences.
That's true.
Over issues that are of much, much, much greater substance. And I've seen this over years and years in this town. And I do my best, as do others, as far as I'm concerned, you, to not really comment too caustically about the situation, which in one word is cowardice.
Mm-hmm.
Cowardice, in another word, is falsehood. And a third word would be an utter folly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, what I think that thing is, and again, I wasn't at either the press conference or at the, I guess there was some sort of a rally later, and perhaps Scott Graham will be calling in on that issue, but I think that, to me, I'm wondering if that wasn't an attempt to mobilize the kind of depleted and demoralized and even angry core of SCAN activists who C. Porter and Fitzmaurice, Crone, Sugar, and Riley just selling out big time to whether it's Rittenhouse downtown or whether it's the police department around the sleeping ban or whether it's the landlords on rent control or whether it's Mercy Charities housing on the Dolphin Lee. And they just sort of, you know, are wondering what the, you know, there's this Tidelands issue has been hanging fire for 2.5 years. They were supposed to deal with it when they got into office. Indeed, there was some initial action taken, but it's been sitting, you know, they've not taken it to court. They've been, you know, dicking around, mulberry bushing about, and it's just, you know, it's not gone anywhere. This is Seaside Company's stolen property from the city from the 30s. Why the hell aren't they acting on it?
Well, I mean, just from what I read in the Sentinel, of course, they claim a judicial ruling back in the 1930s.
No doubt.
Right. I just really question why this should be a front burner issue, like the borders farce, and I will call it a farce. Mm-hmm. Every named progressive in Santa Cruz came out for that farce. I didn't see him coming out for the Danner recall when it was known that the DA directed time cards to be falsified.
Or the sleeping ban, for that matter.
Absolutely.
Or rent control. No, I mean, I have to agree with you there, but I also, you know, I think that's my kind of offhand speculation about why they're doing this now, because I think they want to
deflect.
They're concerned about their own activists deserting them, and they have to do something to satisfy them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's no one's going to, not too many people will argue against environmentalism, all right, myself included. It's when these things are used to blowhard and deflect away from issues that are truly going to modify the situation with the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that Mr. Geiger and Mr. Pusser and other so-called left-leaning property owners need to come above board and let's conduct open forums on housing, and let's see where rent stabilization, if you will, falls.
Well, there's supposed to be this open forum on homeless issues coming up, which I guess might have an in for affordable housing or rent control at the, I think it's June 29th at the Holy Cross Church, if I'm not mistaken. That's the Schmidt-led Monday morning group, which has excluded me, but nonetheless, and sort of excluded or kind of sidelined the sleeping ban and civil rights issues. But they are still on the agenda, and that may come up at that point. Not that I'm recommending we all hold our breaths, but I just thought I'd mention it. Anything more you want to say, Bob?
Well, I guess that is the theme that I will ride with for quite a while, is that it ought to be embarrassing to the so-called progressives in Santa Cruz. They should hold their heads in shame over their lack of their ability to deal with local issues. And it is utter blowhardism to stand at the town clock and wave signs about Israel and Palestine when you can't take a position on an issue that's politically.
Well, wait a minute. It makes you feel so good, though, Bob.
That's exactly what it's all about, and Scott Kennedy and the whole lot. All right.
It also plays well in the Democratic Party scene, and it plays well in other forums, and it plays well for if you're running for political office and
sure.
All that sort of thing.
And it's the fault lies not in our stars, but in ourselves that we are underlings.
Yeah, it sounds like Julius Caesar to me, man.
Robert, good luck with finding a place.
Thank you.
All right, I will listen in.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Yes, and that this now unpaid commercial announcement, help, I'm looking for a room, get me a room, I'll pay. I am indeed leaving my current digs, and I need a place to move to. If anybody has an idea, wants a rascally radio announcer for a housemate, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, our phone lines are open here on the air at 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz's studio line at 96.3. Now this.
Well, Americans are very friendly people, as countries right next door will recommend. We never mess with other countries' business, but if we do, we hope we'll still be friends. We care about the way you run your country, and we'd like to be supportive if we can. If someone's running out of ammunition, we're proud to be the first to lend a hand. Next war at the White House, so our president won't have so far to go. still we love it. We love it, but it's all so far away. Let's cook it home next time instead of cater. In honor of the good old CIA. Yeah, let's just have the next war at the White House, so our president can really see the show. We won't have to wait and see if they invite us. No, we'll just roll the White House rocks and throw our own. You know, for some of us, it's like we're the producer. If you get that frontline thrill behind the scenes, and it's hard to catch the action from the papers, it's hard to know what John Wayne really means. Well, some folks don't appreciate our efforts. They don't know what it feels like to be free. But we're there in a flash if we smell trouble. But it's time to host a conflict in D.C. We'll have our world policemen fall right at the White House. Yeah, we'll have it in a language that we know. We'll barbecue our own backyard the next time. Yeah, we'll just host the show and bring the party. Host the show and bring the party. Host the show and bring the party home.
And that was Carol Denny from Failure to Disperse, one of my favorite albums. Some of you may know him as well as I do, as Steve Argue. He's one of our free radio broadcasters. He's also a man who recently won a significant victory against the city who was trying to harass newspaper vendors, and he was a newspaper vendor. Actually, they were just trying to harass him, in my view, because of his stand-up behavior around the Happy John Dine shooting, around police abuse. Steve Argue went to jail for 7 months for punching Officer David LaFaver, who was later found himself guilty of excessive force against a woman and child, and disappeared from our law force, or our law enforcement force, if you will. I received a very disturbing message from Steve this morning, and I'm going to play it for you on the air right now.
Definitely very soon.
Sent today at 7:36 a.m.
Hello, this is Steve. I was beaten up by some Klansmen or something similar last night. And I'm just on my way to a phone. I'm up in the Bonny Doon area. And I got a hold of this guy who brought me here. He said he's going to bring the sheriff, or he called the sheriff. But I wanted to get a hold of someone who I could trust in terms of the police and what's going on. I don't know what the fuck happened last night. They said they were gonna kill me, and one of them broke me loose at a certain point, told me to run, and said that and let me run. And I woke up with these cuts and bruises definitely very still alive, but I need to get the fuck out of here. Anyway, you're not there, so I'm gonna call around.
End of message.
And Steve is a homeless person. In case you thought troll busting was dead, in case you thought beating of homeless people was a thing of the past, in case you thought a direct vigilante brutality against high-profile homeless activists was no longer with us in the civilized 2001 in June, sounds like it's still very much with us. I haven't been able to talk to Steve about what actually happened. I just got that message, but I wanted to play it for you out there to let you know the seriousness of the situation we face. And yes, this is aggravated by having a sleeping ban that makes it criminal for homeless people to gather in groups or well-lighted areas, criminal to use the police for fear that they will get warrants themselves uncovered, as Jim Costner was suddenly the victim of what seemed to be a completely bogus warrant that appeared couple of days ago. He was taken to jail. He was held. He finally got released on bail. We interviewed him from the jail, as you may remember. Jim's the man who was accused of and admits to smashing the Columbus statue in San Jose, apparently believing that war criminals are best, should we say, prosecuted and convicted, or perhaps held up as examples of what not to do rather than built statues in honor of. That seems to be Costner's position, and I think it's probably the position of a lot of us, though few of us would wield a sledgehammer. Costner himself, as I said, was dragged in by the police on a claim of a 2-year-old charge that he had, first they said it was a bomb threat, then they said it was a false police report, and the last story was that he had, I think, resisted arrest, but the resisting arrest charge was already dealt with in court a year ago. He served the time, so it seems to be another one of those convenient mistakes by the police department that they should have known about, because, well, they were instrumental in Costner's case, and he's not exactly unknown to them. Kind of a word of advice for those of you who read the Santa Cruz Sentinel yesterday. Costner spoke to reporter Daryl, I was going to say dumb as a post, Cole, but that's not really the right way to describe him. He is a police propagandist. He writes stories that are biased in favor of the police department. He covers the bullshit drug war without any kind of counter coverage of how many people's lives are being ruined by the drug war. And he does all this with a mild smile and a friendly, amiable manner, and he's a nice guy. I mean, I can talk to him for half an hour and go away feeling kind of warm and fuzzy, like I got a friendly reporter there. Well, that's how Jim felt, Jim Costner, when he replied to Daryl Cole's phone call asking him these